Good morning and welcome to our podcast. My name is David Pritchard and I'm the head of marketing here at Sintons. I'm joined today by my colleague Emily Richardson from the employment team here at Sintons. And our podcast today, which will last approximately 10 to 15 minutes, is the recorded podcast version of our most recent employment focus, the written version of which you can find on our website, www.sintons.co.uk. But today, Emily is going to take you through podcast version. So without any further ado, straight over to Emily. Emily, good morning and over to you.
Thank you, David. And thank you to everyone listening in today. So as David said, today's podcast is going to be on the alternative options available to employers now that the furlough scheme has ended. So whilst for some employers, things are getting back on track, for some, the disruption is still ongoing. Therefore, it's important that employers know what other avenues there are to deal with this. So the first option is seeking to vary certain contractual terms, such as employees' hours or pay, to meet any reduction in activity levels and work requirements. So this method can suit employers who either don't need all of their workforce to work full-time hours, so at least not at the minute, or for employers who do expect things to return to normal, but at this moment in time are in some sort of financial difficulty. So when proposing to change terms and conditions of employment, the first step towards doing so is to try and gain express consent from employees to accept the change. When doing this, it's really important to remain transparent about the reality and impacts that the pandemic has had, which has caused a need for this change. But obviously, employee consent is not always necessarily forthcoming in these situations. And whilst employees can impose a unilateral change on employees, this carries a high risk of breach of contract. And if the employee resigns, it could lead to unfair dismissal claims by employees with more than 2 years' service. So it shouldn't be taken very lightly. So a step employers can also take is to terminate employees' existing contracts and to re-engage on the new terms, obviously with those changes incorporated into that contract. It's important to note here, though, that such action would actually amount to a dismissal in law for the purposes of unfair dismissal claims, again, if an employee has 2 or more years' service. That means it's really important here that employers follow a fair process and show that their motivation for such change was reasonable. Another important consideration here is that if employers do follow this method, that if this would affect more than 20 employees in a period less than 90 days, so i.e. more than 20 employees are going to be dismissed and re-engaged, collective consultation obligations may also be triggered. So that's just an extra consideration here. Another option available to employers to avoid having to implement redundancies are temporary stoppages. So these are used to stop or reduce work on a short-term basis. Temporary stoppages include measures such as sabbaticals, unpaid leave, and holidays. And this can suit employers who do want to retain their employees, but they require more time for trading to return to pre-pandemic levels. So firstly, looking at sabbaticals, this is a measure which may only suit certain employees with particular personal and financial circumstances. This method also requires a consideration of the overall effect on job security and future job prospects. So it's not necessarily an option that may suit every employer and employee. However, it is always worth raising as a possibility, as you never know individual circumstances and wishes. It might perfectly suit particular individuals. That being said, however, in the current climate, a sabbatical for someone who may ordinarily see this as attractive, it might not be as an attractive option as it might ordinarily be. And so this does need to be borne in mind. Another way of stopping or reducing work temporarily is arranging for employees to take periods of unpaid leave. This would likely be shorter than a sabbatical, but once again, the same factors will need to be taken into account. Clearly, in this situation, consent would be required. However, this would not be the case if the employment contract or collective agreement allows the employer to implement unpaid leave. In terms of implementing this, any restrictions in existing policies could be waived to encourage take-up, but employers might also want to consider reserving the ability to decline any requests. So take, for example, if you have employees in roles that you need to keep at the present time, then you would want to reserve that right for that purpose. The final measure under temporary stoppages is requiring employees to take their contractual or statutory annual leave at times when the business is quiet. In this situation, employers would need to ensure they give employees the required notice under the Working Time Regs 1998. And just as a note, this is double the length of the amount of time of holiday to be taken. It's also important to note that employees will still be entitled to their normal remuneration whilst on holiday. So moving on from temporary stoppages, the next alternative to the furlough scheme can be overtime bans. So where there's no entitlement in the employment contract to overtime work, it's actually very straightforward for employers to cease offering this provision. However, if there is a contractual right to overtime in the contract, the employer must obtain consent of employees to stop offering this contractual right. So when considering imposing such a ban, employers need to consider the effect of this implementation on its workforce. So for example, whether more women than men are dependent on overtime work. So this is really important to keep these considerations in mind with this. Employers should also seek, again, to retain the right to reverse any ban if the need arises to reinstate previous overtime provisions. Moving on, redeployment, retraining, or a secondment placement can also be considered. This is where an employer believes an employee is at risk of redundancy, and this is because moving employees around the business is an option if there is a reduced requirement for the particular kind of work that they carry on, otherwise would be redundant. Employers will need to consider whether an employment contract contains a mobility clause and or a redeployment clause, which enables them to require employees to move around the business. If this is not present, they will need to ensure that, again, express consent is obtained to make these changes. Actually, though, this is something employers would need to consider as part of a fair redundancy consultation process anyway. So looking at options in order to avoid having to go down that route could actually be a preemptive step. Moving on to layoff and short-time working, laying off employees is an option to still retain employees without having to provide them work or pay. This might be an option, but only where there is a contractual right to do so. If this method is to be used, the contract should make clear that employees will not receive their normal salary during this period. If this doesn't happen, any enforced layoff will amount to a repudiatory breach of contract, entitling an employee to resign. They could then claim constructive dismissal and potentially an unlawful deduction from wages where no pay is provided. If there is not a contractual right to lay off, then any proposal to do so will need to be the subject of consultation with employees and will require their agreement. Short-time working is another effective way of avoiding redundancies whilst guaranteeing work. Short-time working, as it says on the tin, reduces working hours and usually has a corresponding reduction in pay. Although this means that employees earn less remuneration than they previously have received, they are probably more likely to accept this as an alternative to redundancy than the permanent loss of a job. As with laying off employees, to introduce short-time working, employers must have a contractual right to implement such measures. If this is not the case, they must, again, seek express agreement from employees to agree to the change in terms. It's also important to note that employees may be entitled to certain statutory guarantee payments if they are on layoff or short-time working. So the final point to consider before redundancies is that of a general headcount reduction. However, it is one to proceed with caution. Whilst yes, employee costs are often the highest single item of expenditure, and so it is really hard to resist the temptation to cut headcount as a short-term fix, such short-term measures can affect long-term prospects, and once an employee is lost who's talented and experienced, it can be really hard to replace this when the business improves. Doing so can also affect staff morale and also reputation as well. So if this still needs to be done, other measures to reduce headcount that might delay having to take such steps include restricting recruitment, withdrawing job offers, deferring new joiners, and reducing non-permanent staff. However, if the above measures cannot be adopted, then the final step is that of redundancy, which is sometimes unavoidable. If this is the case, redundancy is deemed to be the only option. Employees must be satisfied that the statutory definition of redundancy applies before consulting with employees and taking action. For a redundancy dismissal to be fair, employers not only need to establish a genuine redundancy situation, but they also need to follow a fair and objective procedure, which also includes the selection process, if this is applicable. Just to note as well, that where an employee has 2 or more years continuous service, this fair procedure must also include consultation with individual employees. If employees do not have 2 or more years continuous service, employers are required to give employees their specified notice period, which may also include payment in lieu of such notice. Once again, if employers are proposing to make large-scale redundancies of 20 or more employees within a period of 90 days or less, collective consultation obligations will apply. So that is the end of the podcast outlining alternative options to employers. Whilst there were calls to extend the scheme, obviously the 30th of September deadline remained, and so the above options remain as the alternatives in place for organisations still affected by the impact of the pandemic. Okay, so that's all from me, and I'll pass you back to David.
Thanks, Emily. Very quickly for me, we release our webinars, podcasts and blogs on a regular basis, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, should you wish to take a look. You can also follow the employment team on Twitter at SintonsHR. If you'd like to discuss anything Emily's raised today further, please don't hesitate to get in touch with her or a member of the team. Emily can be contacted via telephone 0191-226-7878 or via email emily.richardson@sintons.co.uk. Once again, thank you very much for listening, not only to this, but for all the other employment-related content. We do appreciate it. We don't take your listenership for granted, and we look forward to speaking to you next time. Stay safe, everyone. Thank you.